And welcome to Community Chats, a podcast developed by the learning team of the Jewish Museum London. Community Chats is a series of interviews with different people within the Jewish community. I'm Lauren, and in this episode of Community Chats, I'll be speaking to a liberal rabbi. So, hi, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Hi, Lauren. I'm Leah Mühlstein, Rabbi Leah Mühlstein. I'm one of the rabbis at Northwood and Pinner Liberal Synagogue, and I've been a rabbi for 5 years now.
Hi, Leah, and thanks again for coming in today. So, first question, why did you decide to become a rabbi?
I grew up in a very, very small Jewish community, actually not in the UK, but in Germany. So there wasn't really very much community life for a lot of my childhood, and most of the things happened at home. But I always felt that community is a very, very important place. And when I was a teenager, my parents were part of a group that actually started a liberal community in Munich and started to build a community. And I really saw the power of a community. And I felt very strongly that I wanted to play a part in building communities. I think originally I thought, oh, what job can I do to build communities? And maybe rabbi didn't quite come to mind at first. But I realized quite quickly that actually being a rabbi means that you can do all the different parts of community building. You can do some of the social aspects, but of course also the religious aspects and all the educational aspects. So what I really love about being a rabbi is that my job can be so varied, and that I can really do every day is something different that I love. And so I really became a rabbi because I wanted to build communities, and I wanted people to get the most out of communities in each in their own way, whether that's a religious gain that they have or just a social connection that they have to other people.
So what does it mean to be a liberal rabbi?
So being a liberal rabbi, I think, is not altogether different to being an Orthodox rabbi or being a Reform rabbi or a Conservative rabbi. I think what we all have in common is that we are the spiritual leaders of our community and the religious leaders of our community. We try to strengthen our members' Jewish identity. But I think as a liberal rabbi, what is maybe different for me than it is for other colleagues is that a lot of my work is not just with Jews, but about helping people navigate their very complicated lives. So a lot of my Jewish members have family members who are not Jewish. So, for example, it's not uncommon for me to officiate at the funeral of someone who isn't Jewish, but maybe their spouse is Jewish, or maybe their cousins are Jewish, but they feel part of our community. So I think for us, that's one of the big differences. I think that our responsibility reaches beyond just the Jewish community sometimes. I think the other thing about being a liberal rabbi is that I really try to help people navigate their otherwise secular lives. So I understand that not every one of my members, or probably hardly any one of my members, thinks about their Judaism every moment of their day. And what I try to get them to understand is how what they do in their ordinary lives and maybe volunteering with a secular charity, why that still has Jewish relevance. And so that they can articulate that, you know, why do they care about helping the homeless, that's not just a secular value about social justice, but that there are also Jewish values behind it. And that's sometimes a very difficult thing, and especially in conversations with younger people, of how to understand how something that seems so secular that you can also do as a secular person can be something Jewish.
What is your guiding principle when interpreting the Torah and the mitzvot?
I think for me, the Torah and the mitzvot is primarily a cultural religious heritage. It means that if I want to consider myself Jewish, and if I believe anyone who wants to consider themselves as Jewish, not just as being born Jewish, but having meaning behind it, it means you have to be in dialogue with that tradition. It doesn't mean you have to interpret it exactly as people 100 years ago, 300 years ago, or even 1,000 years ago might have interpreted it. But it means that you have to be in dialogue with that heritage. So I might interpret things differently today than maybe Rashi did in medieval times. But I think it is my responsibility to be in dialogue with the Rashis and the Rambams and all the commentators and the ancient rabbis, so that there is still this chain of tradition, even though I don't have to say their interpretation is necessarily the one that is valid for our day and age. I think for me, the Torah and the mitzvot have to be alive and they have to be relevant to our modern day. And I think sometimes when we get very focused on a very traditionalist interpretation where we say, you know, everything has to be as it was in medieval times, I think what that forces us to do is to say we actually pretend that modernity doesn't exist and that the world hasn't changed and that our social context hasn't changed, when in fact, actually, I think if we look at all of our Jewish tradition, until modernity, really until the 18th century, Judaism always developed and was always open to external influences. And I think you really have to work very hard to pretend that there weren't external influences. And I think one of the things I love most about our tradition is that it's so rich and varied, and that we have all of these influences, whether they're Greek or Roman or from the Islamic times. You know, a lot of our commentary that focuses on grammar only emerged under Islam, or similarly, Christian influences on our tradition. You know, the fact that basically everyone believes Jews should have only, there should be monogamous marriage, only emerged under Christianity, under Christian influence, because the rabbi said we shouldn't be, if we don't do that, the Christians will think we're barbarians. So it's always evolved, and I think it needs to evolve. So I would say, for me, always, the tradition has a vote, but it doesn't have a veto. I need to be in dialogue with it, but I don't have to be ruled by it. And I think it is our responsibility to say, actually, there is an evolving halakha, evolving Jewish law. And, you know, if we now live in a society where we have laws about equal marriage, we have to respond to that Jewishly. And I'm very proud that we were one of the movements who didn't just sort of, in hindsight, accept same-sex marriage, but actually actively promoted a law that would enable us to also do Jewish same-sex weddings, because I feel very strongly that that's where our society is at now. And if we can't respond to it, we become irrelevant to a large segment of the Jewish population. And I think that is a real loss to the world. So I think that for me is the most important principle, that the Torah and the mitzvot have to be a living entity, not something that is just in the history books, and therefore it has to continue to evolve.
You've spoken of your approach to interpreting the Torah as being like a dialogue with your cultural heritage and a dialogue with that tradition. Could you provide us with an ex- an example of this interpretation or this dialogue, perhaps surrounding this creation story?
So I think the creation story is a very good example of that. I strongly believe that the creation story, I mean, apart from the fact that we're not the only ones to have that creation story, the creation story was an attempt by human beings to make religious sense of the fact that the world was created and that there are different aspects to the world. And it came at a time when, you know, science wasn't there to give you an answer. So I personally don't, my initial training was as a chemist, as a research chemist. So I'm a scientist by first training. So I don't believe there is a conflict between science and the creation story. And I also don't believe in this, oh, you know, if we just twist the science and we say, well, really, if we look at the creation story, that's what, you know, it's talking about evolution. I think that's nonsense. I don't think the creation story was talking about evolution, because evolution wasn't a concept that was around in the days the creation story was codified. But I think it was their best attempt at making sense of the world and of how the world came into being. Today, it is science that makes the best sense there, and I don't think there is a conflict. I think what we have to do as religious people is we have to say the creation story wasn't just a science attempt. It was also an attempt at making religious and ethical sense of the creation story. It doesn't just tell you that God created these things. It gives a value judgment. It says God said, and it was good, or when human beings were created, it was very good. That is something that science doesn't give us. And that's where we still need to say, what in that creation story gives us that ethical and moral compass about understanding science? So I think it gives us an obligation to actually look at science and say, well, we shouldn't just embrace science and let scientists do whatever, but we need to give it an ethical framework. And we need to say, you know, scientific discovery is good, but it has to be respectful of ethics, of human beings, of the environment. And I think we can learn many things from the creation story. So actually, one of the things I did as the House of Lords was debating equal marriage legislation was I wrote to every member of the House of Lords a letter to explain why I wanted to have the right to marry same-sex couples in a Jewish wedding. And one of the things I said was that in the creation story, it said that God created human beings in God's likeness. And if we are all created in God's image, that means however we are, we should be celebrated and we have something divine in us. And that gives me an obligation to treat every human being as having a divine spark. And if I, you know, can marry heterosexual couples, I should have the same ability to do that for same-sex couples. So I think for me, it's, you know, I try to take out of this tradition, out of this story, something that is beyond just an explanation of this is how the world came to be.
And lastly, what is your favorite thing about being a rabbi?
So I think my favorite thing about being a rabbi is really that I get to share the most important moments in people's lives with them. So it's very funny. A lot of rabbis will say funerals are their favorite thing. And actually it is. It's one of the most special moments that you can have in supporting a family, in at the worst time, giving them hope and comfort. But of course, it's not just funerals. I'm in the prime position. Everyone else has to look, oh, can I see the couple as they're getting married? I'm in the front row. Or when I give a blessing to a bar or bat mitzvah child, I'm right there and I get to share that joy with the family. I get to share the sorrow too. But I'm there to support people through their lives. And you know, there's just nothing that can compete with that.
Thank you so much. And your answers have given a lot of food for thought. So you've been listening to Community Chats. Goodbye, or as they say in Hebrew, Shalom.